As we settle into the retreat and keep bringing our intention and our attention inwards, using the breath as an anchor, our meditation is something that we have to engage with. And just the physical act of sitting in one posture is not necessarily going to make the mind peaceful. Like Ajahn Chah says, he's seen chickens sit in their nest for a long time, so he doesn't see them get either wise or peaceful. So that it's the engaging of the mind with our meditation object and the wholesome qualities as we are attentive to that which is wholesome and skillful, the mind will naturally settle. There's a phrase in the suttas, a stock phrase, it comes up over and over again, when the Buddha is describing the movement of the mind towards peacefulness. Secluded or withdrawn from sensual pleasures, secluded and or withdrawn from unwholesome mental states. So it's a vivijehi kamehi, vivija akusalehi dammehi. It's a stock phrase, and it's just, we have to pull the mind back or withdraw the mind from its impulses towards that which stirs the mind up or gets it entangled in negativity. And not yank it back, thrash it back, but just withdraw. Recognizing that there's a different result to the, say, when the mind is engaged in its fantasies of gratification somehow, through sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, or is caught up in the various kinds of negativity, either worry or fear or irritation, dullness, it's impossible for the mind to be clear. But we can direct our attention, say by the very nature of having a mind, we can formulate intention, we can direct thought and attention to that which is skillful, that which is wholesome, that which brightens the mind, that which allows the mind to feel a sense of ease. So this lifting up of the mind, lifting up of attention, directing thought, and then evaluating what's the result of that. Is it helpful? Is it working? Is it not working? Am I getting entangled? Am I dropping stuff and feeling at ease? So that there's an evaluation, not proliferating, but just recognizing what's the effect of that directing of thought What's the effect of that thought stream, that impression within the mind? Because it has an effect. Both in a positive, wholesome, skillful way, and its opposite. So that we need to be alert to what's the results of that. Using the thought processes, using the attention of the mind to be able to direct it. Otherwise, meditation ends up being kind of a passive, kind of like the Samuel Beckett waiting for Godot, and this, because nothing ever happens. But the Buddha is encouraging us to recognize that we have the ability, we have the responsibility to take care of our minds, take care of our hearts, cultivate that which is peaceful, leading to wisdom. But it's helpful to have that foundation of peacefulness, a certain stillness, and it's important also to recognize the function of desire in how we measure the on a material level. Of course, there's never enough to fulfill desire, but similarly on an internal level, if we're driven by unskillful desire, by grasping, attachment, then you're always going to feel you're coming up short. Like, oh, it's just a little bit more peaceful, so there's, you have to be alert to that. I mean, you have to formulate an intention to apply the mind, but also learn how to recognize, say, one's own temperament. Different people have, some people have a discursive temperament. Some people are settle easily. Some people reflect. But the nature of desire is that it's always going to feel like it's not enough. So to just be directing attention to, how do I feel at ease? How can I release, relinquish, be settled enough to contemplate the experience of peace, contemplate the limitations of impermanent, unsatisfactory, non-self phenomena. Without getting too obsessed, but one keeps directing thought and then letting go. It's like Ajahn Chah saying, yeah, there's only two things a practitioner has to do, is just know and let go. It's that knowing, that awareness, that alertness, that presence, but then also to release, to let go, to drop things, so that one's building a momentum of well-being and clarity. They're using the structure of the mindfulness of breathing, this quality of knowing. Now, it's interesting that there's 16 steps to the Anapanasati Sutta, the discourse on mindfulness of breathing. And the first two steps are breathing in long, one knows, I'm breathing in long, breathing out long, I know, breathing out long, breathing in short, I know, breathing out short, this knowing. The verb is pajanati in the Pali. And so it's knowing, discerning, understanding. It's the same, or it's the verb that is the root of the word panya, or wisdom, discernment. So that it's not, you know, so there is a certain discernment, reflection happening. Even, okay, breathing in long, breathing out long, breathing in short, breathing out short. There's a clarity, an understanding, a knowing that has an element of discernment there as well. What's the effect? Is it useful? Is it not useful? Is it beneficial? How to sustain that quality of knowing? The basis is coming back to the knowing, supporting that quality of knowing. All of the rest of the steps of mindfulness of breathing, the verb that the Buddha uses for each step means training myself, or I train thus. Experiencing the whole body, I breathe in. Experiencing the whole body, I breathe out. But it's a training. It's an undertaking where you're, because part of training is also experimenting. Experimenting with it. How do I make that work? How can I make this useful? How can I turn my attention in a way that it helps the continuity of awareness? So it's an exploration of the practice. It's a training. The verb is in the Pali is sikati, and it's a training. It also has the connotation of learning. Educating oneself. And there's a few Thai speakers here. Pali is sikha, Thai is siksa, which is a very ordinary word in Thai. It means to study, to learn. So that the sense, okay, we're using the breath as a basis of studying, learning, training, cultivating a knowledge and understanding. So that experiencing are sensitive to the whole body, I breathe in. Experiencing the whole body, I breathe out. And make it useful. Sometimes we get trapped in, so okay, the Buddha says I got to be experiencing the whole body. So okay, what is it? I breathe in, and so I've got all these arms and legs and fingers. How do I do this? Don't make it complicated. Don't get tied up in it. This is an encouragement to bring using the. The Buddha is broadening the scope of what you can rely on for your continuity of attention and awareness. You've got the whole body. There's lots to work with. There's lots to explore. Enjoy it. Make it useful. Make it interesting. 'Cause that's the... you know, sometimes our practice gets bogged down when we forget to enjoy it, and when we forget to make it interesting. We do it as a sort of applying a method, a sort of methodological approach. And if I just follow the technique, then I'm going to get peaceful somehow. But it relies on the quality of awareness. To say the result that we experience is dependent on the quality of our awareness and mindfulness. Calming the bodily formation, which can be both the physical body as well as the breath body. And there was a question about that last night, relying on the breath body. And the Buddha says, the breath is another type of body, because it conditions. The scriptural word is kaya sankhara, which gives you formation. It can also be the body conditioner, so that the breath is constantly conditioning the body. So we can condition the body, we can work with that condition, with that breath body, and relax, we can settle, we can calm our experience of the body. And of course that has an effect on the mind, has an effect on the heart. And it also is a way to say when we, the body, the physical body really starts to settle, there's a presence of alertness, that's where we start to narrow things down a little bit, rein in the scope of our attention. Because then not in a overbearing way, but in a way that's it's the natural wish of the heart to not have to deal with too much. We can bring that quality of clarity to something a bit more refined. So just the sensation of the breath and how we experience the breath. And similarly, not to get too literal in the, as the mind starts to settle, allow the experience to speak for itself. And sometimes we can breathe, the mind starts to get peaceful, and you could be experiencing the sensation of the breath, might not correspond to the picture, the anatomical picture that you have of your nose, your trachea, your lungs, but it's an experience. It's a breath body to experience that. And I can remember one time the mind getting really peaceful and settled, and the feeling of the breath as it came in and going, that's about 3 feet in front of where I was sitting. That's what it felt like. That's not a problem, because all you're doing is a breath body. It doesn't have to correspond to any kind of it's just this, is it peaceful? Is it settling? Is it clear? Is there mindfulness? Is there alertness there? Am I reflecting and investigating? So paying attention to that. So calming the body conditioner, calming the breath body. That ties in with the next encouragement that the Buddha gives is encourages us to, say, consciously direct attention to feelings of joy or rapture, or sometimes it's hard to, so the English sometimes limits what we think we should be experiencing. It's the feeling of lightness, a certain sort of verve, or you know, kind of coming alive to the the present moment, kind of well-being, maybe a certain exhilaration. Not distracting, but it's a kind of the mind brightens. There's a feeling of you know, the body isn't burdensome or painful, and so that yeah, experiencing, sensitive to, and the word is piti in Pali, sensitive to piti. And breathe in, sensitive to piti, and breathe out. And it can be just, you know, very minor, just, and just to be, even to direct the mind, that directing thought, oh, how can I make this pleasurable? How can I breathe in and make it, not turn it into a burden, not turn it into a something that is tense and tight and worrisome or competitive or complicated. How can I just enjoy myself? So breathing in, breathing out, and just bringing that possibility up in the mind. This is where the sense of, you know, sense of fullness can easily be generated, and creating a sense of, say, a fullness, a sense of ease. Remember the next one that the Buddha talks is sukha, so the sense of pleasure, experiencing or sensitive to pleasure, I breathe in. Experiencing pleasure, I breathe out. And one, you can lift that up in the mind as a possibility. I mean, it's a more attractive possibility than saying, breathing in, I feel miserable, breathing out, I feel miserable. You know, you know, it's, you know, well, you know, which we can do, and we tend to. but I say, no, you're encouraging the mind, that lifting that up is a possibility. And it's interesting that when still anchored and rooted in the experience of the breath, still anchored and rooted in the experience of the body, but the body starts to, yeah, feel comfortable. The Buddha's instructions on, as the mind becomes more settled, and the idiom that the Buddha uses, is very beautiful. I mean, suffuses and fills, permeates and pervades this body with that piti and sukha, with that, say, that delight and that pleasure. So it's, again, you're not just a passive recipient. You're engaging in that. That yes, fusing and filling, permeating and pervading the experience of the body, the experience of the breath, with that well-being, with that pleasure. That's the Buddha's instructions. It's not illegal. it's not sort of... I mean, that's just something, in the Buddha's teachings, the Buddha is very explicit in the that cultivation of happiness and well-being. We're learning how to be happy. Of course, it has all many different layers, beginning from our conduct of virtue and integrity, it brings happiness. Our generosity and kindness, our compassion and caring, these are things that bring happiness. And similarly, as we develop our mindfulness and our meditation, you'd be attentive to how to make this a pleasurable experience. And again, not just wait for it to happen as if it's some sort of expected reward for 10 days of difficulty and pain. Yes, we'll do that. Said, well, how was your retreat? Oh, it was really tough, but it was great, you know. But we set ourselves up for that, so that the Buddha is sort of saying, right from the get-go, enjoy yourself, delight in the practice. Allow yourself to suffuse and fill, permeate and pervade this body. And it is interesting that the Buddha is very explicit in all of the instructions on the developing of refined states of meditative stillness. There's not a dissociation from the body. They're integrated as a body-mind experience. Through the instruction and the illustrations of the four jhanas, they're all grounded in, the images are all grounded in the experience of the body, just like that suffusing and fill, permeating, pervading this body with the delight and pleasure coming from seclusion. That's the description of the first jhana. So that we're withdrawing from just the entanglement and complication of our normal external as well as internal lives, and suffusing and filling, permeating and pervading this body with the joy and well-being of, I don't have to do that. I can step back from that. I can dwell. The heart can actually dwell in well-being. So just with each in-breath, with each out-breath, it's a way of connecting with that feeling of suffusing and filling. Paying attention to that quality of fullness. Of course, the effect of that is that the mind starts to get very clear. And there isn't a whole lot of pondering and proliferating that's needed to see things in their true nature. It's a suitable tool for understanding things in their true nature. We can be lifting those themes up for reflection. Is this permanent? Is this stable? Is this constant? Of course, nothing is. It's a rhetorical question, but what it does is then encourage the mind to relinquishment, reflecting. And so, is this where I'm going to find complete freedom from suffering? As Ajahn Chah would always I mean, he was always encouraging us to just, look at the. And I mean, sometimes it's difficult in English because it's the word dukkha. If you translate it as suffering or, but stress is actually a good word in this, especially on a meditative sense. Look at the stress recollecting something, expecting something, trying to get something out of the meditation, you start to realize, oh, there's stress there. Well, I can relinquish that. There's the dukkha in that. And the reflection on the, this is not self. What is not yours, abandon it. What is not yours? Body, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness. As soon as you try to get a nice little sort of label with mine and stick it on it, there's nowhere for it to stick. It's not yours. There's nothing. It doesn't mean you're not experiencing it. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have an effect. But to identify, this is who I am. This is mine. This is what I will always be. That's folly. And it's a recipe for dukkha. So these lifting up and reflecting. This is where the practice of, say, samatha vipassana, the development of tranquility and insight, they should always work together. They should always be supportive of each other. I mean, sometimes you'll incline more to reflecting, investigating. Sometimes you'll incline more to settling and stilling. But they work together, and they have to support each other. So this path that the Buddha has laid out for us is dependent on these aspects of the mind that are, we rely on. Say, peace is not just the peace of, say, tranquility and meditative stillness, and it's not just having a cogent thought and understanding, but it's, as Ajahn Chah gives the an image of, he said the it's like having a match and a candle. Like you've got a candle, but you haven't lit it yet, so it's got potential, and you've got a match. You strike the match, but then it flares up, and then it goes out real quick. It's not bright for very long. So then that's like insight, because you might have a true thought, a true understanding of something, but it's hard to sustain it. And similarly, the candle, it's not lit yet. There's the potential. It's the potential of the peaceful mind. It's steady, it's still. But it has to do something. You bring that, the match and the candle together, then you have a light that radiates out for a long period of time. So that's joining of tranquility and insight. Yeah, they work together. They rely on each other. As we, this is a reflecting, say, coming back to the Buddha's instructions in Anapanasati, it's on the, because they're the pattern, and I say that you have four sets of four, and they're line up with the four foundations of mindfulness, so that the first four steps of mindfulness and breathing, about the body, the second set is to do with feeling, so that, say, piti and sukha are feeling, and that's in the realm of feeling. And then the Buddha experiencing the mind conditioner, citta sankhara, the mind conditioner. And that's another aspect of feeling. Feeling conditions the mind. Feeling and perception. Say feeling and say vedana and sanya. Sanya is perception, is memory. And so that there, that's what conditions the mind. That's what, say, all the different thoughts arise out of feeling and perception. And so that as the mind becomes more settled, as it becomes more steady, experiencing, what is it that generates our those impulses, those movements of mind, that the whole train of thought that we get dragged along behind. This feeling and perception, feeling that coming back and experiencing that, sensitive to that. And then the last one in that section is calming the mind conditioner. So that, yeah, paying attention to calming. And that's where it's helpful to that suffusing and filling, permeating and pervading the body with these feelings of well-being, because that helps to slow that train down. And then you can start to recognize more clearly, oh, yeah, look at that conditioning process. Look at those impulses, where they come from, where they arise from, as they're sort of pulling out of the station, you start seeing them more clearly. We're learning about the mind. We're learning how to work with the mind, but do it in a way that you're enjoying it, you're delighting in it, you're learning from it, because all of that is, as I say, that all of the rest of those the aspects of mindfulness and breathing, the Buddha, the primary verb that the Buddha uses is sikkhiti, training, learning, educating oneself, figuring it out. So that should keep us busy for the morning. So we can sit quietly for a bit, and we'll go into a walking period after.